back at base. We're at Rebel Uncut's HQ. We've had almost a complete day of filming, but if you know the film industry, days are at least 36 hours long. And what is it now? It's only approaching 6 p.m, so we've got a couple more shots to do. And so far, wanting not to tempt fate, this is me touching wood again. Been a very successful day. And a part of that success is standing right next to me. Who are you?
I'm Steve Kilpatrick, and we were just having a discussion about what my title was, and sound boss or something like that. Might be.
In charge of sound.
In charge of sound, that was it, because we're doing this in an unusual way, really. I'm the composer of the music, and I'm also doing sound design. But we have a bit of a team as well, so we have a location sound man and another sound designer who's going to come on, and I'm sort of going to pull everything together with all of these people. So today, it's really talking about what sound we need to capture, but we're taking lead from Bill, who is the location sound recordist, and I'm being his assistant, and then we're sort of working our way through the script as we go, what sound we might need to pick up for a later day, where there's going to be music, where there isn't, what kind of music is it going to be. We did a little bit of trying to get the performers moving to the tempo of a sort of temp track we've lined up with the script. So
you've got the audio in mind as the acting is unfolding, and you're thinking of the rhythm of the actors.
Yeah. So from the start, sound was conceived as a big part of the project. It comes from I'd done some work in radio drama, and Mike and I were looking at doing some audio drama. And one of the things I was very interested in is the fact that sound is often put in separate compartments that are headed up by little divisions. And what we wanted to do was make something that was very coherent, and sound was really integral to it. So we've had long discussions throwing pieces of music between us. Something like this would work. And then Mike saying, well, how much time would you want for that kind of piece of music? And we can tweak the script or the shots to accommodate that. So it's been from the early discussion stage through scripting, it's been... Sound has always been quite high in the priorities, really.
I don't know that many people in the film industry who underestimate sound, but there's been some pretty big boobs in the past, hasn't there?
Yeah, I think there have been big boobs. But I think really why I'm sort of taking charge of the sound department is... it's not so much to avoid boobs, but to maximalise, if that is even a word.
It is now.
The effectiveness of sound.
Yeah.
That rather than boobs, I think sound is sort of not used to its full capability. Even in something like radio drama that is a completely oral medium. Sound design is obviously very important, but music is often sort of tagged on as an afterthought, or there's no budget for music, those kind of things.
So give me some examples of how you get the most out of sound in what you do.
That's a good question, and I guess it adds a lot of factors to it. One is getting the location sound right, but the other thing is the effectiveness of sound design and how it works together with the music. So that's why I'm sort of in charge of both of those things, that these things at times will become aspects of one another or become seamless, hopefully, if I do my job right. That's what we should get. So we get a cohesive sound world to the film.
You obviously not afraid of getting deep down and dirty. You've been holding the boom a lot of today.
Yep.
And yet... yeah, you're more akin to be in front of a lot of screens composing. I'm imagining you compose. What setup do you have when you are creating music?
Yeah, well, that can depend a lot. I don't have a particular system to compose, so I might be at an instrument or working on paper, very old-fashioned way, or I might work straight into the computer. Usually I work in sort of traditional notation, and then maybe if there's a budget there, we get musicians into play them. If not, then it's doing it sort of in the box with synthesis. I also write music that uses found sound as well. So a lot of processing of sound and creating new sounds from it. So these will become aspects of the film. So, for example, one of the sounds I'm going to make is going to be the sound of time travel in the film. I don't think that's a secret. It was in the first one, yeah, so that's
yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
to
you
say.
Did pause for a moment there. Am I giving anything away? What does time travel sound like?
Well, we haven't... The sound isn't made yet. It will depend partly on what the cut's like, but in the original film, we actually avoided showing, due to budget constraints, any sort of special effects and time travel, so we didn't really use it there. One of the ideas that we sort of all liked in the team was that time travel for America shouldn't be sort of an easy experience, that it should be painful in some ways. In the first film, we sort of start with this dazed America character who we sort of can assume has just traveled through time and she's sort of out of it. And we like this idea of that we threw around it, that maybe she's, you know, punching through time in some way, so it's going to be sort of a violent experience. So that's what we're working on at the minute. But when the visuals come back, we may have to adapt that way of thinking a little bit. So the actual final sound is still not there yet. We have to see what happens.
And it's interesting how the absence of a visual doesn't matter when sound can conjure so much in the mind's eye. And we underestimate that a lot, I think.
Yeah, I think we do. And I think one of the things, because we've talked about sound from the start, is that we've been able to think, you know, how much impact does this visual need to have by itself, and how much can we pick up, or how much more can we make of it through the sound design. So when it comes to the time travel shot, you know, do we need a sort of Hollywood size special effect, or can we have a more subtle effect but with high impact sound?
Like a key being scraped down a piano wire, for example. Isn't that the sound of Time Machine?
Well, that's the sound of one Time Machine, yeah. The most famous one, perhaps. Yeah.
The TARDIS. So, thinking of the audiophiles out there who might be listening to this saying, oh, that's an awesome job, get geeky on me. What equipment is being used today, and what equipment do you use to edit and process?
Well, for this particular shoot, we're basically using sort of standard field recording equipment, Sennheiser shotgun mic. It's a fairly small setup that we're using. When it comes to processing sound later or placing the sound, you could use pretty much any DAW, but I use Logic personally. But I do a lot of processing in a piece of software called CDP, which stands for Composer's Desktop Project, which is a piece of software really designed for electroacoustic composers. Which is one of the things that I also do, where you take a recorded sound and process it and create a piece of music out of it. So that's one of the tools I use, SoundHack. There's Michael Norris plugins. So there's a lot of software-based stuff that I use. We'll probably do a couple of Foley sessions, which will be in the studio, which is much more old-fashioned, so stamping in gravel or chopping pieces of fruit, depending on what carnage we make. But,
you say carnage. The Michael Norris plugin, was he any relation to Chuck?
Not really. I'm pretty sure he's not related to Chuck Norris.
Because that would probably do something awesome.
Yeah, Chuck Norris's geekier brother. You know, he could do a punching through town sound. Punching through time sound, definitely.
Probably,
yeah.
The software probably comes with a button.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It just has a preset that is punching through time, pretty much.
Oh, I'm really looking forward to seeing how things develop. What's Mike like to work with? You've known him for a while, haven't you?
Yeah, I've known Mike. We were in school together. We sort of became friends really because we had interest in music. So I think I'm about a year older than Mike, so I was a year ahead of him. And there was a couple of us in our year who were into rock music. And then there was Mike and another buddy of Mike's who were also...
Into Icelandic death metal or something.
I think this was slightly... This was the early days of death and black metal. But yeah, so I guess that became important. So we used to sort of go to the same places. We used to go to gigs together and those kind of things. So that's where our friendship started. And actually, I lost touch with Mike for quite a long time. When he went away to university, I went away to university, and somehow we lost touch, and which I was very sad about. And I tried to find him through his own house, and then you're not sure. Well, maybe they don't want to be in touch, yeah. That kind of thing. And actually, I didn't know what he was doing, and I kept looking. I couldn't find him on the internet. And then I just thought one day, well, I'll Google his name. What does he probably do for a living? He's probably a writer, from what I remember of Mike. And where would he probably live? And so I put Mike Sizemore. Well,
his other name.
His other name. Yeah. That's why he was hard to find. He has a very common other name. Writer, London. And I basically got this unused Facebook page with a sketch of somebody with sort of a Lemmy style beard mustache yeah. combo. And I was like, well, that could be the kind of beard Mike might have now after you're 15, 20 anymore, years, yeah. You know. So I just kind of contacted this guy and I was like, are you Mike Atherton who went to this school and, you know, this kind of thing? And he wrote back, are you the Steve who had a sister called Laura? And you know, and then we communicate by email for a long time, and I was actually just in London at a trade show, so we met up for coffee and got talking and decided the other wasn't too big a jerk that we would carry on being friends again. And then after a couple of, you know, visits and hanging out, we started throwing ideas around of things we might like to work on, and one of them was early on was a series of audio dramas that we sketched out pretty thoroughly, and it was from this idea of I wanted to do some radio drama that sound and music were given much higher priority than they usually actually were.
What happened to them? They sound intriguing.
They're
still in your head.
They're still in our heads, and some of it's written down.
See, when we build, because I mean, you're making a movie now.
Yeah.
You and Mike are making a movie along with you know, an incredible team here. Yep. And Mike's already mentioned the building of the world.
Mm.
And that world can go off in no end of different directions. You know, we're leaking excerpts through audio, through video, through photos, through tweets. You know, the main character, Merica Adams, and that's the hashtag as well, should you want to catch up with the conversations online, has her own Twitter account as the character. And there's, you know, talk of graphic novels and there's talk of other kinds of stuff which mm-hmm. is coming around this. An audio drama sounds perfect. Oh, you mean people might call that a podcast?
Yeah, yeah. Well,
kind of trivialises what it sounds like you have in mind.
Yeah. Well, I think the original idea was because I was working with some radio drama. I did a couple of dramas for Radio 4. Was it Radio 4? Woman's Hour. It's Radio 4, yeah.
Yeah.
Woman's Hour. And I'm a big fan of radio. And I'm a big fan of audio dramas as well. I really like the Big Finish ones. Big fan of those. So originally, we sort of attempted to pitch these through the producer that I was working with for the Woman's Hour dramas. And the difficulty was sort of, where do you place these? It's not, because these were sort of, sound was central to each of the stories in some way. It was crucial to the story, but they were all sort of sci-fi or sci-fi horror stories. And I guess at the time there was Radio 7, but they didn't really create new drama. That was old drama where they might use, or they would be playing the Big Finish one. So it was, where to place these things, and we sort of found there wasn't really a spot in Radio 4, or there was the Wire slot that used to be, I think it was on Radio 3, which doesn't exist, I don't think, anymore. So that was the thing, where to put them. And I still like the idea of we could do them in some other way, or maybe make them, I don't know, maybe something like Big Finish do, but maybe not in CDs. It could be something you could download from Bandcamp, for example, or something. I still like that idea.
Yeah, and there's a lot of live streaming audio happening right now. I actually like the idea of, I mean, you talked about audio kind of sci-fi horror. I'd love the fact that it was released at a time when it should be listened to.
Yeah.
So you only ping it to UK channels, and you're only allowed to listen to it at 1:30 a.m.
Yeah.
You know, on a Saturday morning or something exactly, like that. And this is when it's being delivered to you. And yeah, if you copy it and play it later, great, but you don't get the benefit until you've had a few drinks and it's late at night and you're lying in bed and it's all dark and it's just you, your mind, and this soundscape created with brilliant writing. So many possibilities. Can you give a quick tip to somebody who wants to be more involved in audio and what they can do to kind of make that passion a part of their life, whether it be their working life or just to take it more seriously? What do they need to do?
I think initially the hardest bit is to actually get working with anybody, really, to move from being in your bedroom and doing stuff. I sort of already had connections, people who knew I was a composer, so I got asked to do music for things originally. And then what happened a couple of times was, I guess it was possibly people not knowing what sound involves for a film, that there was an assumption that I was doing everything. So I did, and sort of learned as I went along through drawing on what I knew and then applying that to sound. And I guess I am probably tuned into the sound of a film or a radio drama, perhaps a little more than other people, or you know, to the non-composers or people who don't work in audio, but and just sort of applying those principles to what I did. So
what you're saying is, just do as much as you can and everything to be involved in the field of sound, and then you can niche yourself into what you prefer.
Yeah, I think so. I think
That's the similar
never turn
in so many
down,
exactly.
Really.
Never turn anything down. Yeah. It's similar in so many different fields as well.
Yeah.
Really looking forward to seeing how this is going. This has been, you know, day one, such a fun project to be seeing people work together so well and seeing the film America Adams unfold, which of course is Precision 2 in some people's minds. The hashtag online is America Adams. What's your Twitter name?
It's a very clunky one. S_Kilpatrick.
Easy to remember.
It should be Audio Gandalf.
Very Gandalfy today, definitely. You know, thou shalt not low pass, which was one of our jokes, which we found funny at the time.
And they were very funny at the time.
I can smell pizza. I think it's time for a break before we get on with the shooting.
Yeah.
Thank you very much indeed.
My pleasure. Thank you.